Hello, this is Charles Shepherd of the Fort Wayne Museum of Art, bringing you another chapter of American Stories, the behind-the-scenes look into America's history of art and culture. Today's story is about Larry Rivers, proto-pop painter and leader of the raucous jazz band Larry Rivers and the Mudcats. Rivers was born Isaac Grossberg in the Bronx, New York City, on August 17, 1923. He was the son of Ukrainian immigrants Samuel and Sonia Grossberg, and he played the piano excellently even as a child. When he reached his preteens, he switched to the saxophone, and for the next 20 years, he played professionally in jazz bands, even as his interest in the visual arts developed. His name was changed when a nightclub comedian introduced his group as Larry Rivers and the Mudcats. After a stint in the U.S. Army Air Corps, he was back on the road with his sax, playing a gig at a resort with a new band and a fresh outlook. By chance, the piano player's wife, Jane Freelicher, was an art student in Manhattan who introduced him to her new friend, the abstract painter Nell Blaine. Blaine liked him immediately and loaned him a sketch pad to use in his off hours. She also encouraged both Jane and Larry to enroll in Hans Hofmann's art school, which they both did after the band's main tour concluded. Larry quickly established himself as one of Hofmann's top students, but he refused to accept the idea that his figures had to turn into abstract forms. His interest was primarily in the narrative, and his figures were the primary characters in each of his scenes. At the end of the year, he drifted from Hofmann's school to NYU's art program, where he felt that his interests found a better fit, and where he was befriended by other figurative painters like Al Leslie and Robert Goodnow, who were not afraid of the abstract world's ban on the human form. Rivers managed to scrape together enough money for a trip to Europe after that first year of study, where he raced around looking at the work of every great painter. Nell Blaine was with him when he visited the Louvre and saw Courbet's famous picture, A Burial at Ornans. She remembers that Larry was so moved by that painting, especially by the idea that the grave was in the foreground, the closest thing to the viewer. As soon as the European trip ended, Rivers went straight home to his studio and painted his version, The Burial. Rivers' Burial was tremendously powerful and very well received by the art world. New York Times art critic Meyer Shapiro loved the painting and convinced Gloria Vanderbilt to buy it for her foundation and then, happily, donate it to the Fort Wayne Museum of Art. The Burial was Rivers' first institutional acquisition, and it launched his career. Well aware of all that was going on around him in the New York art world, Rivers fought to maintain a professional distance from its seductive swirl. Personally, he struggled for independence from the social dramas that had distracted him since the dissolution of his earlier marriage and his increasing visibility on the New York scene. He had an almost insatiable desire for recognition and attention, however. He confessed that he was excited that many of his new friends seemed to have a real desire for him. He reveled in the attention, and he explored several homosexual affairs, even while he was romantically involved with and actively pursuing women. These libidinous liaisons fed his ego, but thoroughly complicated his already strained professional and personal life. He continuously burned the candle at both ends and was perpetually out of money. He started losing his focus in the studio. Overwhelmed, he considered suicide. On a weekend recuperative trip out to a seaside village on Long Island, he felt enormous relief at being free from the scene back in Manhattan. Rivers moved soon to the country, and it totally re-energized him. In his typical cocky style, he decided to create a major painting that focused on a subject that the art community would see as a national cliché, George Washington crossing the Delaware. Intent on proving to all those who doubted his artistic credibility, Rivers next painted a shocking series of nude portraits of his hefty and somewhat homely mother-in-law. Then he depicted various currencies, long before Warhol's money paintings ever emerged, designed the stage set for Frank O'Hara's play, Try Try, and appeared on a televised art game show where his art historical knowledge earned him $32,000 in prize money. Over the next 40 years, though, Rivers was a workhorse, a relentless experimenter whose paintings paved the way for the entire pop art movement, whether he intended to or not. Each decade brought him greater critical respect, and his work is now featured in the collection of every major museum in the country. Thank you for joining me, Charles Shepherd. Please join me again next week for another episode of American Stories on NIPR.